To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the science fiction podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatornia. I bring you The Adventures of Alibi Jones, science fiction adventure in the 22nd century, about the year 2139 right now. Alibi Jones was a mediator for the Solar Alliance Interplanetary Force, as humankind expands into what is already a populated intergalactic neighborhood. But due to some recent events, Alibi can't be in the Mediation Corps anymore. So now he's working in covert ops. Although right now, he's on a special assignment. He and his crew are off on a mission to investigate a mysterious ancient alien vessel that has appeared. Alibi Jones and his crew, along with a psychic, Lenora Schwald, and a xenobiologist, Devin Humphreys, are approaching a giant ageless alien vessel in their cruiser, much smaller ship. Now, some have called this ancient craft a ghost ship and said that ships that got too close saw visions, ghosts, other strange shit. Alibi and company are nearing it now in their little cruiser, the A.D. Foster. And you can come along for the ride as we approach the ghost ship, as we get into Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. First, a little bit of news. This, right now, is episode 495 of the Glow in the Dark Radio podcast. I started it over 12 years ago, in September of 2006. And we are approaching episode 500. I will be taking a week off for Thanksgiving. So, episode 500 should be hitting us on the 15th of December. That's the plan right now. Five more episodes, and we're at 500. Wowza. Now, as we're getting closer, I would like to feature you on episode 500, doing something glow-in-the-dark radio-related. Even if it's just saying hello. Or congratulations, or whatever. So I've set up a phone number you can call. Write this down. I'm not going to put it in the show notes. I don't want the number getting out there. So write this down. It's 802. That's our Vermont area code. So 802-322-4281. So 802-322-4281. Call that number. You'll hear me talking about the podcast in 500. Leave your message at the tone. There are, you know, rates and charges. The usual stuff applies. I'm sorry, I don't have an 800 toll-free number. But yeah, it's there. Voicemail is standing by. Operators are standing by now. No, voicemail is standing by. Not a toll-free. Again, it's 802-322-4281. And so, call it and leave a message that you'd like to be on episode 500 of the Glow in the Dark Radio podcast. I want you there. On the way next, I've got Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. But first, a word about a very cool science fiction series you should check out. If you like my stuff, and maybe stuff that's a little darker, more on the thriller horror side, then you should be checking out Paul E. Cooley's Derelict series, and it all begins with Derelict Marines. Check it out.
50 years ago, Mira, humankind's last hope to find new resources, departed the solar system. 7 years into her mission, she disappeared. She has returned. SNR Black, a Sol Federation Marine Corps vessel, is sent to retrieve her from certain destruction in the Kuiper Belt beyond Pluto. What they find will change humankind forever. From Parsec Award-winning author Paul E. Cooley, Derelict, Marines, Part 1 of the Derelict Saga, combines military sci-fi, space opera, mystery, and suspense to create a journey you won't forget. Podcast available at shadowpublications.com. Paperback and ebook available from amazon.com. Some mysteries shouldn't be solved.
Now here's Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. The colossal, ebony craft of unknown origin filled the viewscreen on the bridge of the A.D. Foster as they approached. The great old ship's hulking immensity evident in the lack of surface detail, even as it blocked out the nebula and the stars beyond. As Alibi and Cat worked the cruiser's controls, Dr. Humphreys and Lenora Schwald stared at the viewscreen, watching the alien vessel.
"It's like driving up to a mountain," Humphreys said.
When the others looked at him with blank expressions, he explained.
"I like hiking, climbing mountains. When you're on your way to the mountains, they always look closer than they are, because they're so big."
"I was thinking the same thing," Cat said. "Mountains."
All eyes turned to Cat. He shrugged.
"Sarcasm," he said.
"Emily's fault," Alibi said. "She shouldn't be teaching you sarcasm."
"Too late," Cat said.
"Not sure I like the idea of a sarcastic darkour," Alibi said.
"Sounds like a cocktail," Lenora offered. "Bartender, give me 2 sarcastic darkours."
"I could use a drink," Humphreys said, rolling his eyes at Schwald's attempted humor.
He chuckled, amusing himself. Alibi kept a steady hand on the ship's controls as Cat watched the power readings. After glaring at Dr. Humphreys for a time, Lenora settled back into a trance. Humphreys tapped into the cruiser's scanners and started taking his own readings from their scans of the alien vessel. "Dr. Humphreys?"
"Yes, Captain Jones?"
"Call me Alibi, please," he said.
"Devon," Humphreys said, gesturing at himself.
"Devon, did we ever figure out the first time around which race this ship belonged to?" Alibi asked.
"No," Humphreys answered. "We didn't have enough time to study it. It wasn't any race we'd run across prior to that first encounter with the ship. The early tests and scans seemed to indicate it predated the reign of the ancient enemy. Chances are its people are long gone."
"Older than the ancient enemy, huh?" Alibi asked.
"On an interstellar scale, the ancient enemy weren't really all that ancient," Humphreys said.
"Go figure," Alibi said. "What's in a name, huh?"
"They called themselves the people. Azamet claimed to lead the elite of the people. Now, they're the hunger, if that encounter was real. Almost forgot about that."
He shrugged it off for the moment. Even if his astral encounter with the failed experiments of Azamet hadn't been real, Azamet had not been seen in human space in a few years.
"Better to worry about the matter at hand than bad dreams."
Alibi glanced at the array in front of him as they closed the gap to the other ship. "Cat," he asked, "any change, fluctuations?"
"Power indicators are holding steady for the most part," Cat said. "We are seeing an internal power anomaly caused by the operation of the transpace nullifier, but it is following the patterns we were told to expect."
"Keep me informed, Cat," Alibi said, "especially if you get an anomaly you don't expect. Be sure to watch especially close for any fluctuations when we dock with that old airlock." Emily returned to the bridge. "The transpace nullifier is on. Seems to be working," she reported to Alibi.
"Good. Do you mind if I go back to my cabin for a bit?" she asked.
"No, not at all," he said. "We'll call you when we need you."
"Poor kid."
Alibi couldn't help but feel a little sorry for her as he watched her turn and leave the bridge.
"She would hate that, I'm sure."
Emily hid her emotions well. He couldn't read her at all. Alibi turned back to the ship's controls and appreciated something he did have the ability to read. 5 further minutes of steady progress brought the tiny cruiser up alongside the giant alien derelict, revealing more detail. The surface of the craft appeared to be an intricate webwork of ebony fibers, interwoven strands of varying size
knitted together into a solid black wall. A glint of metal gave away the location of the portable airlock installed by the last covert ops team. As they approached the ancient husk, Alibi lined the cruiser's starboard side airlock up, skilled enough a pilot to make docking, even in these unusual circumstances, appear routine. He guided the cruiser in, matched airlock to airlock with the alien ship, and brought it home with a satisfying thump. "Seal established," Alibi said. "We have a lock."
"The onboard anomaly is reaching a notable level," Cat informed Alibi.
"What do you mean?" Alibi asked.
"The anomaly is caused by the operation of the transpace nullifier," Cat explained. "The greater the power draw by the nullifier, the greater the anomaly. The nullifier is working, drawing on greater and greater power, and dampening something. I am not sure what. We cannot find anything on our sensors."
"We have any way to find out?" Alibi asked Cat.
"Not short of turning off the nullifier and seeing what happens," Cat said.
"What, and have that ship suddenly disappear?" "Pass," Alibi said. "Think we want more nullifier, not less. Let's get the big one up and running. First things first." Alibi and Cat, safely encased in construction EVA suits, guided the large transpace nullifier into place on the outside of the alien ship. Dr. Humphreys had identified the surface of the vessel as a hardened, crystalline silicate.
"A simple adhesive should suffice to hold the unit in place," he'd said. "Like sticking it to glass."
Alibi and Cat mounted the transpace nullifier like a giant metallic spool up above the airlock where the cruiser was docked, held in place by a large square pad of industrial-strength, double-sided tape on its base. The adhesive appeared to hold. Alibi pushed against the device, propelling himself backwards into space. "Seems secure," he said, as he floated back in. Cat pushed off the nullifier as well.
"Yes,"
Cat said. He used his momentum to float down to the cruiser. Cat pulled a set of portable power and control cables from the side of their ship, unrolling them from their external hub. Alibi watched as he glided back up to the transpace nullifier, the cables playing out behind him like a long tail. The side of the alien craft loomed like a giant wall of woven black glass, dwarfing the cruiser, the transpace nullifier, all of them. Now that they floated outside of the cruiser, they could see that the surface of the alien ship wasn't solid black. The material had a dark transparency, striations of silver buried deep within.
"Can black glow? It sure does shine."
"It almost looks like obsidian," Alibi said, "except for the metallic-looking streaks."
"Obsidian?" Cat asked.
"An earth mineral, a black rock, shiny, like glass?" Alibi tried to explain.
"Black rock, black glass?"
Cat said.
"Yes?"
"Kind of," Alibi said. Alibi and Cat connected the power and control cables to the transpace nullifier. Job complete, they floated back to the cruiser's open portside airlock and headed inside. "Hope this works," Alibi said. "I'd rather not become one of its ghosts, you know." The lock filled with air. The inner doors opened.
"Yes," Cat said. "I too should very much like to remain in physical form. That is not sarcasm."
"Nope," Alibi said. They removed their helmets and EVA suits and made their way to the bridge. Alibi checked with Emily, back at her usual post. She'd returned to monitor the power readings for the cruiser and the built-in transpace nullifier, while Cat and Alibi were outside. "No real change," she said. "Just some small fluctuations." "Okay, then," Alibi said. "Cat, let's increase the power plant output. Get ready to bring the external nullifier online." Dr. Humphreys had made himself at home on the bridge, turning a passenger seat next to an interface panel into his own makeshift workstation. He studied spectral analyses arrayed on a portable screen in front of him, but looked up at the mention of the nullifier.
"Did it stick okay?" he asked.
"Seemed to," Alibi said.
"I'm getting some very curious readings from the surface of that ship," Humphreys said. "It's hard to pin down its exact composition."
"Anything we should worry about?" Alibi asked.
"I don't think so," Humphreys said. "It's inert, at least for now."
Let me know if anything changes or gets weird, Alibi told him. Anything.
Righto, Humphreys said. He turned back to his scanner readouts.
Alibi watched the cruiser's power plant's potential output build. Took 8 long minutes until it grew high enough for Alibi to turn on the larger nullifier.
There, Alibi said, throwing the switch.
There's no guarantee that will stop the alien ship from jumping, however it jumps, and wherever it jumps to. But, at the very least, we're not experiencing the power drain the other ships did.
We are, however, exerting a great deal of power to do that,
Cat pointed out.
Interesting.
Oh, Captain Al!
Lenora Schwald appeared on the bridge.
Lenora, Alibi acknowledged her. What can I do for you?
I was wondering when I could go over onto the ship, she said, to try to make contact with whatever spirit or mentality might be inhabiting the craft.
I'm not sure it's a good idea for you to go over there, Lenora, Alibi said. Can't you do your thing from a distance, from here?
Well, yes, sometimes it's possible at a distance, she said.
She grew a touch indignant.
Each case is different. In this case, I haven't gotten anything so far.
She paused.
Well, except a headache. That just started. I don't think it's an attempted first contact. We'll see. Will it be soon?
Will what be soon? Alibi asked.
Will we be able to go over there soon? She asked.
Did you bring an EVA suit? Alibi asked her.
What?
Schwald was confused by the question.
A spacesuit? You know I didn't, Captain Al.
Well then, you'll have to wait, I'm afraid, Alibi said.
But there's an airlock, she said.
And no air on the other side of that airlock, Alibi informed her.
Oh!
There are probably some bodies over there, too, Alibi said. We're going to try to get them out first, and then try to repressurize the section. I don't know how long that will take.
Oh, she said again. Right.
She stopped to think for a moment.
I guess I'll go back to my cabin and meditate some more. And see if I can lose this damn headache.
She turned and made ready to leave the bridge, but stopped by Humphreys.
I suppose you have a suit, Devon.
Humphreys looked up.
Matter of fact, I do, Lenora, he said. But I've got no intention of going over there before I can walk over dressed like this. Besides, he said, and looked down, I know some of the people who might be over there. I'll let our contractors clean it up first.
I see. Well, please call me when it's safe to go over there, she announced to the room and Alibi.
She left with a flourish, sashaying out off the bridge.
She may be the only one on the ship in a hurry to get over there, Cat observed.
She's going to go over there and sit on a mat with her eyes closed, Humphreys said,
a scientist's scorn in his voice.
She doesn't face the grim task that you do.
Speaking of which, Alibi said, leaving the phrase hanging, but looking from Cat to Emily. Alibi locked his command console. He, Emily, and Cat left Humphreys alone on the bridge as they set off on their grim task.
As much as it sucks to have to retrieve bodies, it's still pretty amazing that we're about to set foot on this ship, Alibi said, as the three of them stood in their suits in the airlock, connecting the cruiser to the mystery craft.
We still don't know anything about the people who built it, except that they predate the ancient enemy.
I am not comfortable with this mission, Cat said. I would like to register my complaint now.
No sense of exploration, Cat? Okay, duly noted, Alibi said. Emily, you want to register any complaints while we're at it?
No, she said. She didn't elaborate.
The atmosphere finished vacating from the airlock, and the door in front of them opened, the space beyond an inky black void.
We'll get some room lighting soon, Alibi said. The temporary airlock's power supply is recharging. It's got some built-in emergency lighting. Should be enough power building for them to kick on any minute now. In the meantime, they had handheld light bars to illuminate the area around them as they floated into the darkened interior of the alien vessel. At first, the space around them didn't look all that alien. The last human crew on board used lasers to cut a hole for the temporary airlock and then inflated an emergency shelter inside of the alien ship to create a human workspace and safe zone. Alibi Cat and Emily floated into that shelter, their light bars held out ahead of them. While the somewhat familiar surroundings were a comfort, the three were also watching for dead bodies and, possibly, glowing green ghosts. Alibi looked around the shelter space, waving the light bar to light up distant corners. It was strange to see such a normal, human-looking space inside of the alien shipwreck. He jumped a little as the airlock's emergency lighting kicked on. The emergency shelter began drawing power as well. A dim glow began to light the shelter room.
"Oh," Cat said. "There, behind us."
Alibi turned around and spotted the first frozen corpse, a woman lying on the floor, floating just above the floor, as the shelter's artificial gravity hadn't yet turned back on. Her body was covered by a fine layer of frost. When they turned her over, her mouth, nose, and eyes were crusted over by more frozen foam crystals, created when her body's moisture tried evaporating in the vacuum. Cat had body bags in his EVA suit's backpack. He drew one out and began to unfold it. He, Alibi, and Emily gingerly wrapped up the woman in the bag and sealed it up around her. The shelter's power supply finally gained a full enough charge to restore all functions. The room lights came on. Alibi looked up as the artificial gravity kicked in. A frozen, screaming face came flying down at his.
That was Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. A frozen, screaming face. Yeah. I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like that coming flying down at me. No, no. Yeah. Hey, a cliffhanger. I've gotten good at these. Or bad, depending on how you look at it. I have to admit, by this point, when I was writing this novel, yes, I did get better at cliffhanger endings to chapters that kept people reading. It's a thing. Who knew? Oh, I love this, though. This is a fun part of the story, and it is science fiction. I know it sounds like a ghost story, but it is science fiction. Same is true for Derelict Marines, which we had the promo for beforehand. At least Cooley says it is. He says it's science fiction. Just seems scary. But yeah, now you have to come back next week. That kind of ending, right? We're only just beginning to explore the ghost ship anyways. I hope you will be back. And we are counting down to episode 500. Once again, I have a phone number set up where you can call and leave a voicemail that is your message that you'd like to be put on episode 500. I'd love to have you on the episode. You've been listening, so participate. That number is 802-322-4281. So give a call to that number and say something for the podcast for episode 500. A reminder, if you like what you're listening to, you can get this book as an audiobook. You don't have to wait till next week if the cliffhanger thing is bugging you. You can go to Audible or Amazon or iTunes and get it as an audiobook. Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. All the Alibi Jones books are available as audiobooks. And so is the Vatican Assassin trilogy. You can get them all in paperback through Amazon as well. And some of them through Barnes & Noble, too. BarnesandNoble.com, anyway. This book is available as a paperback or an ebook, as well as an audiobook. And there are Alibi Jones comic books, too. Two issues of The Adventures of Alibi Jones. Those are available at Comixology. You can find out about all my books at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. MikeLuoma.com. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer, and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.